Hi, today is May 22nd, 2016. This is Mobile View Podcast number 161. I'm Todd Agasawar, my good friend John Westfall. And we don't have a lot on our list today.
So now, we always say that, and then we record like 48 minutes, right, 50 exactly. minutes. So, honestly, we have three things on our list today.
Yep. Let's see how much this will stretch or not.
Okay.
And thing number one, it's kind of odd because I thought we'd have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about from Google I.O., which was this past week.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, the only thing that really caught my attention is something that was sort of pre-announced. And that is that coming to Android N, which I'm calling, Nutty McNutshell or something like that.
Nutty McNutface.
Nutty McNutface. Thank you. See, I can't even remember my own name.
Yep.
Nutty McNutface. Since Google is crowdsourcing, I want everybody to vote for Nutty McNutface. Is running.
I want Nilla Wafer.
That's actually pretty good too.
Yeah.
Is Android apps will run on Chrome OS, and these are native apps. This is not some kind of a VM or emulator. This is just running natively. Now, how it's going to run on x86 is a question. But I think Google says that they can compile to x86, so people just have to recompile that part of it. But if you've got an ARM-based system, it should just run on an ARM-based Chromebook. I don't know, John. I shouldn't say I don't know about you, John, but I have been really interested in Chromebooks for a long time since they came out, but I just couldn't get myself to spend the $200 or $300 because, for the most part, even though it's kind of interesting, I've always been interested in the network PC, the Emerson Companion, which I actually had one of, which is essentially just a browser. But now, if it can run Android apps natively.
Yeah, and with there being more and more smartphone apps on both Google, on both Android and iOS that can do serious work, you know, this week, I mentioned to you before we start recording that I've taken an additional position or some additional responsibilities on at work, and so I've been working this week out of a makeshift office part of the day where I just have my iPad Pro,
right.
And I've been really surprised how much work I've been able to get done just on the iPad Pro without having the computer that's in my usual office with me. So I think that these iOS and Android apps are getting much more full-featured, and I think they could really add a richness to Chrome OS that thus far has kept me away from Chrome OS, because even though a lot of what I do takes place in a browser, I could probably live 100% in a browser if I really had to. I really would like some native apps or just apps that run a little quicker than JavaScript. So right.
And
I think it'd be really cool.
And I believe you can run multiple windows too.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to do app flipping like we did on iOS for so long until, when did split screens come about? 9, right?
Yeah.
Just this past year.
Yep.
So we'll be have not just split screens, but I think you can have overlapping windows just like, you know, on a real PC.
It should be fun. It should be a way to actually see if Chrome OS can grow up a little bit and maybe become more than just a niche player.
Yeah. You know, and I think if Google does something interesting, like, for example, with their Pixel, I think if you buy their Pixel book, you get a free terabyte of storage for a year or 2 years or something. If they give you a free terabyte of online storage along with your new Chromebook that's capable of running Android apps, all of a sudden, I think Microsoft and Wintel World needs to be really, really scared all of a sudden.
Perhaps. I mean, it's in the different price ranges. If the Surfaces were in that same price range or just a little bit higher, then I think that there might be some worry about Chrome OS kicking into the Surface market. But because there's about a $500 price difference between Chrome OS devices and Surface devices, it seems like they're targeting different user groups. I think this is just going to allow people who don't have the money that they wouldn't spend on a Surface anyway to have a more full feature.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about the high-end market. I think, you know, the Surface, like the high-end MacBook Pros, for example, I mean, that's that's a market whose clientele is looking for a very specific set of features, and they're not going to find it in a low-end Windows device or a Chromebook, even the $1,500 Pixel.
Yeah, I guess the reason I jumped to that was that the low-end Wintel market, that group, I don't know if those buyers have ever thought about buying anything other than a low-end Wintel device. It seems the people I know who have Chrome OS devices are people who normally buy higher-end stuff, but they thought, oh, Chrome OS looks cool. I haven't really talked to a lot of people who, when they went to the store because they needed a computer for college or they were buying their first laptop, they decided on a Chrome OS device over a low-end Windows box.
And I think for good reason. I mean, I certainly didn't consider it when my daughter started college. You know, the question was it a Windows notebook? Probably not, because she grew up on Mac OS. So really, it just came down to which Mac, you know, Mac notebook to buy for her. But in any case, I really truly believe that the low-end, you know, the sub-$600 market, it may collapse for Windows. If Chrome actually markets this correctly. And, you know, they haven't really done a whole heck of a lot of marketing. And yet, the Chrome, I believe the Chromebook overtook MacBook sales recently. So
it's possible. We'll have to see what Google does with it.
Yeah.
Google might be waiting till they have a viable product and then pitching it straight at Microsoft. And Microsoft, you know, with their increased, I suppose, belief that they are actually a software company again versus an everything for everyone company, they might not be all that concerned because, hey, if it's a Chrome OS device and it's running Android apps and it's running the Android apps of the Office suite,
yeah,
then it's still got Microsoft on it.
Yeah, if you're paid $99 a year, they don't really care what you're running it on.
Yep, exactly.
In any case, I've been looking forward to an Android notebook for years, and I know there are some out there, but none of them, you know, even Android tablets really don't work as well as I think they should.
Yeah, that's the assumption I've had about them since about 2010. And at that time, I was fully Android. And a few times I was going to buy an Android tablet, a higher-end Android tablet. I did have a Nexus 7 for a while, and I had an original Galaxy tab. But yeah, they just don't work all that well.
So, yeah, and I still have my original Nexus 7 and my Tab 8 or whatever it was, which I thought was the first really viable, both of them were the really first two viable Android tablets.
I will tell you, they've
never gone anywhere.
The Galaxy Tab, the original, has been the best and most reliable digital picture frame I have ever owned. It has been sitting in my living room running about 24/7, 365 now for, at least 3 or 4 years. And I've never had a problem. Occasionally I have to take it out of the picture mode and put on, change the clock because the clock drifts a little bit. But yeah, it's a pretty reliable little device for picture frame.
Yeah, so I'm going to be saving up my nickels and dimes. And, you know, fortunately, it looks like it won't be too expensive. Google has a list of devices that are compatible or going to be compatible with this. And by devices, I mean existing Chromebooks. And it's not all of them. For example, the original Pixel Chromebook is not compatible with this setup, this new Chrome OS running Android apps. So you have to have kind of a recent vintage model, the current generation Chromebook, Pixel C, I think, or Pixel, for example, runs it, but not the original. But if I can pick up something for, you know, under $300, $200, $300 is kind of the limit of my pain point for something like that. The only problem is that, same problem I have with Windows, I can't record a podcast on Skype. I mean, I know there's stuff on Windows that do it. Obviously, other people do it, but I've just never found anything I could use that works. I have something I wanted to test with you, but we'll try that next time. One of the problems with that solution, by the way, is it writes directly to a file format that my Levelator software does not handle. So I don't know how I'm going to handle volume leveling if I use a Windows device to record our podcast. So right now, the way it works is, so some people have a really fancy setup, for those who are listening, where both parties are recording simultaneously with a timestamp. and then somebody edits it and puts it together, and you know, basically you get a nice clean sound because each side is recording locally. The way John and I do it is the poor
because we're lazy.
Because we're lazy, quite frankly. I mean, it takes long enough to do post-processing without doing all that, you know, merging stuff. Is John and I talk over Skype, and I record on a MacBook Pro, both audio tracks. And because, you know, because of different microphones and different distances to our, you know, to our voices and so forth, our volumes are different. And what I do is I run a piece of software that's no longer in development called Levelator. To pre-process or post-process our voices so that the volumes become about equal. So when you're listening to it, you don't hear, you know, soft, loud, soft, loud. And then create the podcast using that leveled out volume. I don't know how to do it in anything else. I'm sure there is. I just don't know what it is. If anybody knows, please tell me. If anybody knows a Windows software that can do it, please tell me, because it'd be a lot easier than lugging around MacBook Pro with me. I mean, it'd be nice if I could record on the road, for example, using, you know, like a Dell Venue 8 Pro, but I just know how to do it. Or I don't know what to use, what software to use to, A, record Skype, you know, simultaneous conversation, and B, then level out the volumes and do the audio post-processing. And I use source. Oh, gee, I can't even remember the name of it anymore. Yeah, I use an open source tool, Audacity. I use Audacity to... After it comes out of Levelator, I use Audacity to put the beginning roll, the B-roll audio track, and then use that to compress it down to a MP4 or whatever it is I'm compressing down to. I can't even. At any rate,
so you really don't know how you produce this podcast.
I had to do a little segment on it one day.
I mean, it sounds very similar to last year or the year before when we were doing the mobile the video clips we did like 7 or 8 of. It sounds very similar to what I was doing to produce those.
Right. We were testing that. That's too hard, by the way.
And all you had to do for that was just sit there and be recorded video-wise.
Right, and still too hard.
Yeah.
Because I could never get the lighting right and camera angles for products and all that stuff. Very unnatural. Plus, I have a face for radio. So, There's that.
I have a face and a whole body for radio. I think, though, the Levelator approach is good because it means that me with my weight and my parakeets with their little weight and you with a weight somewhere in the middle all sound exactly the same.
That's
size.
Right. Your parakeets level, volume, audio levels are the same as you and me.
Yep.
But in any case, I am excited. I believe that this version of Chrome OS that can run Android apps will be released in production form in September of this year, September 2016. If you are a developer, you can get the developer thing now if you have one of the, I think, 3 supported Chromebooks. More will be added later, but I think there are 3 specific Chromebooks that can run this developer version of Android N now with the Android app support. I'm really excited about it. I'm really looking forward to it because more and more, you know, basically, the Microsoft Surface RT, believe it or not, was something I thought might be able to fit in that niche for me. But, of course, it doesn't fall in any niche except a pile of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, a pile of niche.
Yeah, it's a pile of niche. Hoping this one will be more. So, Chrome OS, sometime this September, October timeframe, hopefully an affordable Chromebook.
Really probably means November, December, but okay.
Well, you know, Google's, well, I don't know. Yeah, but Google's been pretty good about it. It's usually been the vendors that can't get the OS on their devices.
Yeah, yeah, that's the sad part. That's one of the big advantages that Apple has had and that Apple holds onto so dearly is the fact that they push updates.
Yeah.
It's really one of those things that once you have that in the Apple ecosystem, you get more annoyed than you and I have been historically annoyed over the Google and Microsoft ecosystem.
Yes, yes, indeed. I will say that, you know, I hope Google takes this opportunity to produce a reasonably priced Chromebook with a Pixel or Nexus or something branding. Because the Pixel that they have now at $1,500 or $1,200, well, anyway, it's over $1,000. It's just way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Even for something that runs Android N. You know, they need something in the $300 price point. $250 would be even better, but let's say $300 price point. They can run Android apps, and you've got a winner on your hands with a keyboard, with a physical keyboard, and a touchscreen.
Yep.
I'm not asking for much. Well, I mean, think about it. You know, the Dell Venue 8 Pro is, I think, the one I bought is with 64 gigs of not SSD, but 64 gigs of solid state storage is, 250? Without a keyboard, though. But the keyboard was like $30 from Amazon. Third-party keyboard works great.
So speaking of monetary things.
Oh, yes.
We can move into your second topic that you have found for us to discuss.
Yes, and I want to hear what you have to say. So Fitbit bought the company that does Coin, C-O-I-N. Is the name of the company Coin?
Yeah, I don't know if they have an actual company name, but Coin is...
So why don't you explain to us what Coin is, because I know you actually bought it. I think it was a Kickstarter thing.
Yes, I have one, and I've never gotten to really use it because it kind of is a piece of junk. So anyway, what Coin was a credit card sized and credit card shaped and credit card dimensioned little device that had an e-ink screen that could display like four numbers and a few other things. And basically, when you got it, you used a little credit card reader on your smartphone. You swiped in all your cards that were in your wallet. It would then upload the magnetic stripe information securely to the Coin. And then when you were at a restaurant, you would take the Coin and, in theory, hand it to the – activate it. So punch in your little code, which was just a one button, so you had to, like, do a series of long and short presses. Punch in your little code, give it to the waiter, have it selected to the card you want charged, and the waiter would go off and swipe this weird-looking card thing into their POS, and then come back and you'd sign. And if, you know, you left it behind, it had a Bluetooth proximity thing where it would, you know, set off an alert. And, you know, it looked really cool and looked really awesome, and then you got it and you realized it really didn't work that well.
Hmm.
And it really didn't work so well that when the – here's how you know a product didn't work that well.
Okay.
It came out, it finally shipped about 9 months past than it was supposed to ship.
Okay.
And about 3 months after that, I got an email saying, hey, you know, Coin 1.0 is out, and man, isn't it great. But, you know, Coin 2.0 is coming out, and if you want one, we'll give it to you for free. So I did that, and I've not heard anything else since then. But I have a feeling there were enough people who complained about their Coin 1.0 that the solution by Coin was just give everyone who ordered a 1.0 a 2.0 to make them happy and keep them from, you know, trying to send this thing back and get refunds.
Okay, so what was it about it that did not work so well? Or is it just pretty much it doesn't work?
Turning it on occasionally, but I tried swiping it at a few places and it just never really swiped all that clean. And it was a little thicker than you're expecting, and yeah, it didn't seem like the application of I could actually hand it to someone and they would swipe it and it would work just fine. I always felt really self-conscious, even if I – because I had tried it at a couple of things where I could swipe, you know, vending machines and other things like that. And I don't think I ever got it to work there. And I only tried it a few times because I was like, well, this thing isn't working right. And then I thought, well, I'm sure as heck not going to give it to someone, you know, to go take it away and swipe it because they're just going to come back and say your card didn't work and that's just going to take more time. And since I only carry like three cards in my wallet anyway, it really wasn't saving me all that much space.
Well, that's disappointing.
It was kind of disappointing. Cool idea. In fact, there's another company out there. I see ads for them on Facebook all the time that are selling a similar product. It's still in pre-order, and they want – whereas Coin, when I originally bought it, it was $50, and then you were going – it was going to be retailing for $100. This other company, that their device has a bigger e-ink display – they want $150 pre-order, and $200 is supposed to be their base price when it comes out. But it's been in pre-order for over a year now. So it's a weird space. I don't think the future of mobile payments necessarily is emulating magnetic stripe anymore.
Okay, and when you say swipe, you literally mean a magnetic stripe swipe. It's not a swipe plus a chip and pin kind of thing.
Nope. The original Coin was just stripe. This new one that I forget the name of it. Does have a chip, and I think the Coin 2.0 is supposed to have a chip as well.
So Coin 1.0 is basically U.S. centric. It won't work in Europe at all.
Yep. But I don't, like I said, I honestly think that. So the news that you posted here is that Fitbit, the wearable company that produces devices that you and I have both used quite a bit.
I like Fitbit.
Yeah, I've been happy with Fitbit. I actually haven't been using mine too much lately because I've been doing tracking with my Apple Watch, and then at night I do sleep tracking with the Sleep Cycle app. So my Fitbit One has kind of been retired for a few months now. But I do like Fitbit, and I like their products, and I think they are one of the more serious contenders in the wearable fitness tracking area. And they've apparently purchased Coin, or at least they purchased the assets of Coin, right. the information technology, intellectual property rights, and all that. I think this is a cool idea. I think if Fitbit could bring some sort of mobile payment system into its wearables that could be used anywhere, which is, I think, what they probably want to do. That's what Coin has. They have a system that the retailer doesn't need anything new to process your card, unlike Apple Pay or Android Pay. Samsung Pay is another one that's very similar to this, where it emulates the traditional magnetic stripe system. So this would be great in theory if Fitbit could bring out a wearable that you could – I could see the ads now. Going for a run, and then you want to stop at the convenience store and pick up a bottle of water or something like that. You know, just pay with your wrist when you swipe this on the reader or something like that. It sounds really cool in theory. The problem, I think, is that it had to have been out about 3 years ago. I don't think it's going to – I think once it comes out, whatever form it comes out in – Android Pay and Apple Pay are going to be much more well-established. In fact, this last week, I don't know if you saw the news that the Currency, which was the QR code-based mobile payment system
Walmart and all those
Walmart
things.
And Best Buy and others were backing, they basically said that they aren't rolling out anytime soon. And they were in test, so this is a major step back for them, and they laid off about half of their workforce. So Currency, I think, right now we can assume is dead in the water. And so
thank goodness, by the way.
They were a horrible, horrible system. Just truly
just a bad idea.
The wrong direction. QR codes and hook it up to your bank account only. Couldn't go through your credit cards.
Yeah, very 20th century.
Yes. So I have a feeling that some of those retailers that were really hoping they could own the mobile payment space and not be at the whims of Android and Apple, they're not going to be able to own it. I think Currency was their best hope of that. So if they can't own it, they might as well just get with the times. And I'm really hoping that we start to see rollouts of – and even if the retailers don't like it, the companies that produce the POS terminals are going to just start adding this stuff in. So within a few years, I think we're going to see not one format win out, but just a format option when you get to the checkout where it'll work with Android Pay, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Fitbit Coiny Pay, whatever that's going to be. It's just going to be all built into the POS terminals.
Okay, so basically I shouldn't have too much hope for Fitbit's acquisition of Coin.
I think you'll see something out of it, but I don't think you'll see it in a time when you desperately need it. I think it's going to be too little too late.
Yeah. And, you know, I should say that now that I have or I have had an Android Wear watch since not quite a year, but since last July or so, I don't want to buy anything that goes on my wrist because I don't want to have two wristbands on. I think that's a
little too... And unfortunately, all of Fitbit stuff is going toward the wrist.
Yeah, and I have a Fitbit One, which you know I just stick in my pocket and works fine.
Yeah, the last good Fitbit.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
I had an interesting experience this week with my Apple Watch. For whatever reason, it didn't charge fully, or it ran down really quick. And so one afternoon this week, I didn't have my watch because the battery had died, which never happens. But whatever, strange things occur. And I realized just how dependent I've become on wearing a watch. I've been wearing a watch for 4 years or so, if you go back to when I got the original Pebble.
Yeah.
And I think in that 10 years where I didn't wear a watch, I'd become very much more situationally aware of time. I was checking time on clocks and on my computers and all of that. And then once it became I could always look at my wrist and see the time, I never really thought about it anymore. So there were times this week where I was, you know, for example, I got up to go to the bathroom at my office, and as I'm walking to the bathroom, I'm going, what time is it? I have no idea what time it is. I don't know if it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever. It was just really weird how I had become, you know, and then I looked at my wrist and my watch wasn't there, so.
Very sad.
Yeah, wristwatches, once you get used to them again, you really use them more than you might think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, don't make me cry. After Spot, Microsoft turned off its Spot service in 2012 or 11. I didn't wear a watch after that until last year, so 3 years at least, right? But now that I've been wearing the Android Wear watch, one day I forgot it at home. I thought I'd lost it, by the way, but because its location thing said it was somewhere between my parking structure and my office, which is, a half-mile walk, or was a half-mile walk. But when I came home, it was just sitting there, so, I'd found it. But that whole day, it was just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and especially it was hard because you got home about 3 hours late because you didn't know what time it was to leave. Exactly.
And I've gotten used to, leaving the phone on my desk or something and just depending on my watch to let me know if it's ringing.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so a couple of things. I added just a couple of things at the end, but one thing that I did have on for John to, if he hadn't seen it, is Netflix, which has been becoming fairly aggressive in tattletaling on ISPs, put up their own speed test. And the way they did it is quite interesting. The only thing it reports is download speed. They said, hey, you know what? When you're streaming video, that's all you need to care about. You don't need to know about latency. You don't need to know about, which I don't think is true, but well, actually it is true. You don't need to know about latency. You don't need to know about upload speed. All you need to know is how fast it's coming down to you.
Yep.
It's an ad-free test. It's called fast.com, FAST.com. It tests against Netflix's own server. So you're literally testing against a server that's, or in the vicinity of a server that's streaming to you if you're a Netflix customer. And there is a link there to go to UklaSpeedTest.net.
Yeah, I'm actually at that website now because I hadn't looked at it. I like the interface. I kind of don't like that it starts the test as soon as you load.
Yeah.
But that is, it's very clean. It just told me that I'm at 32 megabits per second, which is about half of what I'm paying for. But I'm also doing a Skype cast right now, so that's probably another reason. Great option to have it, and a little bit less cumbersome than speedtest.net. Speedtest.net is still my go-to, but it does take a little while longer to load because it's got quite a bit more assets than fast.com.
Right, and it's got a lot of ads and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
So fast.com is kind of the, not today's Google, but yesterday's Google, a very clean, Spartan interface. All it tells you, like John says, it just starts up as soon as you go to it, and boom. Now, two things I wanted to add. John, when John and I started this podcast, he mentioned nothing really caught our attentions from Google I.O., but two items I want to mention why I was just so disappointed is because Google keeps talking about stuff they haven't released. Or they don't have a price. So Project Aura, their modular smartphone, they've been talking about this for 2 years now.
People have been talking about modular smartphones for longer than that even.
Yeah.
I'm just getting to the point where I don't think anyone wants them. And
our friends want them. Our geeky, our fellow geeky friends. They want them. We want them.
Our fellow geeky friends would like to be able to swap out the camera module and swap out the memory and swap out the keyboard and swap out the screen and swap out everything. And yeah, it would be really neat in theory, but I don't think there's a consumer market for it.
I agree with you on that one. I think it's like buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
You just want sort of basics in a car. You don't really want to worry about whether it has a cup holder or not. Just give me the darn cup holder. Just make it a standard thing. Don't make me think about those kind of things.
Well, I think it's pretty clear looking at what most consumers want, how many other things out there that you can really customize and swap. Right. I can't think of any modern device or tool that I use that has as much customizability as a swappable smartphone would in theory. Even my desktop computers, when I had those, most people never, wanted to swap those. And that's why some of those cases, the commercial cases, were a pain to get into because they didn't have to be catering to the home builder market anymore. Whereas if you look at computer cases from the early 90s and before, they were really easy to get into because people had to get into them and tinker all the time. And then we start getting the clamshell designs and other things in the 2000s because no one was upgrading anymore. They were just buying a new computer.
Mm-hmm. Or you didn't need to buy a new one because the operating systems finally stabilized at a point where you could run the next generation operating system without buying a new PC or Mac.
Yep.
Okay, the next one was I almost got excited about. It's called Google Home, which is basically their answer to Amazon's Echo. But again, no price. So is it going to be cheaper than the Echo? It's going to be as much as the Echo? There's no reason to get excited until you know the price and availability. And right now, you don't know either, I think.
The other note that we didn't talk about from I/O that I just thought was interesting and decided to throw in here are Allo and Duo.
Okay, why don't you talk about those?
Allo and Duo are apparently new messaging apps because Google doesn't have enough of those.
No, apparently not.
I mean, they only have Hangouts and Google Voice and probably, you know, Google, like Gmail. They only have other ways for you to get in touch with people. But Allo is a text messaging app, and Duo is a video messaging app. Duo, the, I suppose, cool, kitschy thing of that was that it let you see who was calling before you answered. So, like, kind of like if someone was standing at your front door and you looked through the people and looked at them while they were waiting for you to open the door. I don't really know how great that is compared to Skype or FaceTime. And Allo is a messaging app. Its focus is on security with an incognito mode, apparently that will prevent Google from snooping on the conversation and offering suggestions. But even right after it was released, there were some people in the security community that looked at it and said, yeah, it says that it has a focus on security, but it's not anywhere as secure as iMessage or Skype or any of those other sorts of options. So it just looks like Google has announced two new messaging platforms. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe they will take over Hangouts one day. That might be the purpose. Maybe Google will finally figure out a messaging system it likes. But for now, there's two other names in messaging that you'll have to know about in case you have friends that decide to use them.
Personally, I just wish they would maintain Google Voice and then enhance it.
Yeah.
I think they should just get rid of Google Duo and Allo and
Hangouts.
And Hangouts and just Google Voice. What's wrong with
Throw
Google
it all
Voice?
In one and make it, yeah, that'd be great, but yeah. They're not going to. I'm convinced at this point that whoever runs Google Voice inside Google must have insulted, like, you know, Larry Page's mother or something at one point. And just, you know, we'll never get support and won't even get the sweet release of death. It's just going to languish as a Google property forever.
It's sad. It's such a great service, a great product. I have depended on it since before when it was Grand Central prior mm-hmm. to Google's acquisition. And it was great then. It's great now. It's just not as great as it could be.
Yeah. I just have a feeling there's a manager out there that every time he requests, like, you know, a new computer for his desk or a new stapler or something, he just gets denied. And he's just living, you know, wishing he had never made that joke one day around the water cooler or something.
You know, there's a Japanese word for that. Gosh, I can't remember what it is. But at any rate, for that specific situation.
Really?
Yeah, there is. I'll go look it up sometime. There's one more thing that was announced at Google I/O that actually you can probably use. I can never use. And apparently Google is teaming up with Levi's. You know the clothing company.
Yeah, clothing company.
For a touch-enabled jacket. Now I live in Hawaii. Our average temperature year round is about 78 probably. Right now as we approach summer, it's in the mid 80s, around Christmas time, it'll get down to 75. There is no need for a jacket here, ever.
That
Unless you're sick and you have a fever. So I can never use this thing. Even long sleeve shirts are really not desirable in this weather. So I don't know what they're going to do for those of us in warm weather environments, but their touch-enabled jacket to control music, maps, and more coming, spring 2017. You know, this is like CES, right? Google, I mean, I know Google I/O is for developers, but I wish they would launch things with more, I don't know.
More intentionality to bring it to market?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, so Apple WWDC definitely has a much more promising sort of announcement September, every year.
Right?
Yeah, September. Everything will happen in September.
Right?
Maybe October. Right. You know, if you're unlucky, maybe we'll slip to October. Like, occasionally the Mac OS update right. doesn't come out till October. But
for those of us who aren't developers, we watch WWDC in June. Okay, wait, June, July, August, September. 4 months. That's
yeah.
how long we
And
wait.
The betas are all out. Yeah. On WWDC. As a developer, I can download them the day they're announced. It's yeah. great for both developers and consumers. And for some reason, even though Google I.O. runs earlier, so it should, in theory, grab all the attention first, I think a lot of people are going, yeah, let's just wait for WWDC and see what happens.
And, you know, I have to give a shout-out to Microsoft in the same vein, because their Insider program has allowed everybody, or anybody, I should say, not just developers, to get an early look at Windows, Office, mobile, whatever, right? And so even if it's not going to be commercially available for a year, you know, because beta testing takes a long time, at least as a regular person, you can get access to this stuff pretty easily. And so mm-hmm. I'll give a shout out to Microsoft for doing that correctly for their consumers who, you know, millions of them participate in Windows Insider, and I don't know how many participate in Office Insider, but there's an Office Insider thing, there's a Windows Phone Insider release, and I don't know what else. But they've been doing a pretty good job on the consumer side for that.
I think our final note on all of this for this podcast is, Apple, you're doing everything just fine. Keep mm-hmm, doing it. Mm-hmm. Microsoft, you're getting better, buddy. We really yeah. like this.
Yep.
Google, you are confusing the hell out of
you're
us.
You're getting worse.
Yeah, if anything, you're getting worse, and we would like you to please stop it.
Yeah, yeah. Google is becoming, especially as they kill services all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and on that happy note, I think we're not going to have a podcast next week, Sean. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds like we're skipping next week.
Okay.
And then we will record again probably on the 4th of June.
Yep. Okay. Oh, one more note that I didn't, you know, John and I didn't prepare a lot for this podcast, but apparently the old Apple flagship store in San Francisco shut down last night. Last night would be Friday, May 20th. And the new Apple Central Union, no store.
Mm-hmm. Or
Apple, what is it called? Apple Union Square? Apple Union Square, not Central Union. Apple Union Square, no store in the name, open today, which is their new giant flagship store.
So. Yeah.
I don't have any plans to go to San Francisco, but if you are, go check that out and send us photos.
And buy us something and just
buy us something and ship it to us.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. Mobilese Podcast number 161 is in the can. Thanks, John. Talk to you all later.
Thank you.